Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for September 29th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a beautiful Sunday morning, again, is Jim Allen. How's it going?
You make that sound like it's not the best thing.
Sunday morning. Yeah, it's not easy like Sunday morning.
No, it's Sunday morning coming down like Johnny Cash. It is another beautiful day, and I thank you for getting up early with us. So we have a lot of things to talk about today. This morning.
Yes, we do. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Jason Standards of the SoftBank Hawks. We're going to discuss the funky Pacific League race in which the second place team had the magic number, and then we're going to talk about the Giants three-peat and more. So let's get started.
Ring the bases!
Wow, funky race.
All right, you are a trivia man.
We had a record yesterday.
Yesterday on Saturday.
Not a Japan record. Actually, we had a couple of records this week. We had Mr. Higa.
Higa, yes, of the reliever for the Oryx Buffaloes.
Yeah, he set a record for a scoreless games in a season.
Uh-huh.
And then blew it the next day.
Yeah.
Losing pitcher the following day. And then we had another relief record.
Oh, so you mean yesterday, meaning Friday he set the record, and then Saturday he blew it.
That's correct. He was losing pitcher yesterday.
Right.
And Saturday. Okay, and then we had another relief record when the Yomiuri Giants clinched the pennant on Friday. Tetsuya Yamaguchi extended his record for the most consecutive seasons with 70 games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had another record, was a Pacific League record set yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you if you caught on to what it was.
You asking me to go through the three games and figure out what record was set? This is too arbitrary.
Okay,
you got to give me some direction, son.
Okay.
All right.
Andrew Jones set a Pacific League record yesterday.
Oh, now that one I probably missed. But since you say it's Andrew Jones and you say it's Pacific League, I'm going to go with number of walks.
Well, very good. He drew four walks yesterday, which is not a record, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave him 114, which was the Pacific League record.
It's a single season record for walks in, by a batter.
In the Pacific League, that is correct.
Excellent.
And broke the record of Atsushi Kataoka, set with the Nippon Ham Fighters back when they were playing at Tokyo Dome before he left to play for the Tigers as a free agent.
Yeah, I see him on Pro-Yaku News. I see him
So I don't watch Pro-Yaku News so much. Sorry, sorry, Mr. Yazawa. I don't watch that too much.
All right.
And so you know who owns the Japan record for walks? I think this is the reason why nobody noticed the Pacific League record.
I would have to guess either Sadaharu O or Shigeo Nagashima would be my two guesses.
Well, Sadaharu O would be the answer. The Japan record, and probably the reason why Andrew Jones's little 114 didn't cause much water to be stirred around, was the top 19 season totals were all done in the Central League.
The top 19.
Yes. So Kataoka was 21. He was tied for 21 with Andrew Jones, and now he's 22, and Andrew Jones is tied for 19th with O.
Are you 19th on the all-time list?
Yes.
Right.
And Hideki Matsui, who once had 114.
Wow.
The other guys who are on there of interest are Roberto Pendigini, who once drew 120 walks the year the Swallows won the pennant in 2001, and the only other guy on the list, I should just list them all. Pettigini did it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrone Woods, 121 in 2007.
Okay.
And the other was Tomoaki Kanemoto, who had 128. Now, the other guys in that 119, almost all of them are O.
What was his total? I guess it would be the Japan
158
record.
158 is the Japan record.
158.
He has the top four spots. Kanemoto's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Two nines, 11. He's tied for 9th and 11th.
Wow. That's a lot of wide ones. All right.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So there you have trivia.
Good stuff. All right. Well, so I guess I got it right because you only asked me what it was concerning. You didn't ask me what the figure was and you didn't ask me who held the record previously. So I'm getting off light. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, it's a kind of a Sunday morning bonus trivia question.
Sunday morning bonus trivia question. All right. All right, so last week, it was actually on September 20th, so I did this interview. I went out to Sabre Dome and talked to Jason Standridge of the SoftBank Hawks. And with a lot of things going on, with the Asian Games going on at the moment and me training for marathons and trying to use my off days wisely, I decided to do this interview ahead of time. And at the time, things were really comfortable with the Hawks. They were looking like they were going to have an easy road or a fairly easy road to the Pacific League title, which hasn't really been the case since I talked to him.
Yeah, what a shock. You talk to the guy and the whole team goes to hell.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to take any credit or blame for that, but anyway.
Why not? It's fun.
Yeah, I'm staying away from that. But anyway, Jason started his career in Fukuoka in 2007, and he had decent results. I mean, he wasn't bad. He wasn't great. He wasn't bad. And then the next year...
He came in the mid-season.
Yeah. And then, in 2008, he pitched okay, but he had some injuries that he was battling. And in 2009, he ended up not pitching in Japan. I saw on Wikipedia he signed a minor league deal with the Marlins, and I guess they were the Florida Marlins at that time. And then he joined the Tigers in 2010 and had immediate impact. And then he took off in 2012, and he has been great the past 2 years. And all of a sudden, at the end of last season with the Tigers, he says nothing happened. He didn't have a contract, and they didn't talk to him, and he ended up in Fukuoka. And now he shares the team lead in wins and leads in strikeouts and ERA. So he's definitely one of the reasons why the Hawks are staring or were staring or are close to a PL title, another PL title. But this is a mess, this thing. And he's a great interview, and he's a very young, soon-to-be 36-year-old guy. So this chat was done when everything was looking really rosy for the Hawks and things took a turn. And we'll discuss it once we're done with the interview. All right.
Okay.
So let's hear what he had to say.
All right. Our guest this week is Jason Standridge of the SoftBank Hawks. Thank you very much for taking time with us.
Thanks for having me, man. Anytime.
Yeah, he just stood for some really silly questions from the Japanese reporters, but we always have really great questions on Japan Baseball Weekly.
I always tell people, I say, hey, you can ask me any question. It's not a stupid question if you ask me, but I may give you a stupid answer. So,
there you go. All right. Well, we in the media and a lot of fans expected this team to just run away with the Pacific League, and it just hasn't been that easy. So what has this been like from start to finish, even though you're not finished?
No, I tell you what, it's been a fun ride. We definitely have the team to win. We definitely have the team that they've put together. They went out and got some guys, and just like myself, we put together a pretty good team, and so at the beginning of spring training, especially how we finished spring training, I think we won 13 in a row at the end of spring training. I was just like, wow, if this is any precursor to the way the season's going to go, we're going to crush people, And so I think it was more of, you look forward to that. You're looking forward to like, hey, we're going to really beat some guys, But I tell you what I'm really surprised is just how the Buffaloes have come and they've played really well. I mean, they have...
Some would say over their heads.
And some people... Yeah, some people would say that, but I tell you what, they've got a team. They've got a good team, and they've got really good pitching. And so I think what they've done is they've put it together. And at times where sometimes with our team, we've pitched really well, but we haven't hit. Mm-hmm. And then there's times that we've hit really well, but we haven't pitched really well. Mm-hmm. And case in point, some of my games, I remember in Jingu, we scored 9 runs and I couldn't get out of the fifth. Mm-hmm. I gave up 6. six, you know, and so just stuff like that, you know, I feel like that we haven't been able to put it together completely, but I mean, we're still in first place, man. We're still 2.5 games up in first place, so we're doing something right. But this season has been a lot of fun because I really feel like coming over here, this team has got an attitude of winning, and even if we lose, we're still guys are like, hey. It's over. There's nothing we can do about it. We reflect on the things that we need to work on, but we get ready to go tomorrow, and we have a game tomorrow. And so that's the most important one. And so I really feel like that this team has got a great attitude of winning, and I think that that's what separates good teams from bad teams. You know, teams that are able to have a short-term memory, you know, and forget it and just and move on. So I feel like that we've done a good job of that.
Did we maybe in the media maybe underestimate some of the other teams in the Pacific League?
I don't necessarily think you underestimated them, but I tell you what, I was really surprised. Well, I've just been really surprised at Oryx because they have pretty much the same team they had last year, except for a couple different guys. I mean, you know, you replace Willie Moe with Deho. You know, that's just a replacement there, and he's done really well for him. You know, and Esteban Herman has come over there, and so you know, I'm surprised. I don't think that we underestimated them, but I definitely am surprised. Well, I mean, we said halfway in the season, they're like, oh, they can't keep this up, you know? But they did. And so they did. They've just done a good job, you know? And you know, so, you know, we're not finished yet.
Nope, none. All right. Now, I thought the Hanshin situation was really good for you. And then in the off season, you know, we looked up and you were moving to a different team. What happened there?
You know, honestly, I really don't know.
You don't know.
No, I really don't know. I mean, it was a situation where I wanted to be back. I loved it there. I loved playing there. But I think that they were looking for a closer. And they found one in O, and so they were going to do everything they could, throw all their cards on the table and go after this guy. Me or Randy Messenger were going to have to suffer and get released.
Right.
And, you know, they chose him, you know, and I think they made a good decision. I mean, he's had a great year. He's younger than I am. There's a lot of things that are factored into there. And it worked really good for me, you know, because I came over here and I got
a beautiful city, too.
It is, and I love being back, and I got a 2-year deal out of it. So, you know, the Tigers are not going to offer me a multi-year deal, so I feel like it was better for my family to move over here, and so it worked.
Yeah, to go back to the place where you started in Japan.
Absolutely. So I think it worked out for both clubs.
All right, now you pitched him.
But I still don't know what happened.
But I still don't even have
I still don't know what happened and why. You know?
We'll get Jim on it.
That's right.
Now you pitched in both leagues. What's the difference that you've seen in maybe talent level, hitting level, and playing level between the Central League and the Pacific League?
You know, I would say there's more power hitters, you know, in the Pacific League. But you know, we still play small ball here. We still bunt. You know, guys. You know, first guy gets on base, and so I wouldn't say that there's a ton of difference. Some of the ballparks are different. You know, smaller ballparks in the Central League. I feel like
Jingu, which you just mentioned, where you gave up a bunch of runs.
Tokyo Dome, Yokohama. Yeah, exactly. And so you know, I think that there's some differences there. There's some differences in the players. But what I've been really surprised is how many runs the Central League has scored this year. Just you look at all the teams, and they're just scoring just crazy amount of runs. And you know, we can relate that to the ball, whatever you want to do. But I don't think it's that big of a difference, you know, pitching in the different leagues. What I do enjoy is not getting taken out for pinch hitters. So that's kind of nice, you know, when your team's down by a run, you know, and you've thrown into the sixth or seventh inning, and then they're like, hey, we're going to pull you to, you know, it's like, you know, I only got 80 pitches or 90 pitches, you know, and so you can feel like you go deeper into the game, and so that's not the case here, which I enjoy more because I feel like I can do my job. And, you know, in the Central League, sometimes you feel like you get cut short and you're not able to finish your job.
Right.
So I've enjoyed that, you know, and getting to know the hitters, too, is a big thing. You know, I knew those hitters in that other league.
Right.
They also knew me, but I also knew how to pitch them in certain situations. So it's become a challenge, and I've embraced the challenge. challenge of being able to learn these new hitters, you know, so it's been
fun. Some of them you still knew, though. Some of them.
A couple of them, yeah. Yeah, a couple of them. And you know, yeah, exactly. You know, and being out of the league, you know, it was the last time I pitched in the league. It was 08. And in that year, I only got three starts in the big leagues. Everything else was the minor leagues. So really, 07 was really the last time that I had really pitched, you know, against these guys consistently. So I needed to kind of refresh my memory about some things, you know, and learn some hitters. So it's been fun. Good challenge.
Okay. Now, you talked about how much talent this team has and all we know they got a lot of additions, including you in the offseason. And guys go through peaks and valleys, and we know that stuff. But this team has so much talent where you have players coming up and going down to the farm and back, and then pitchers too.
Yeah.
How do you guys deal with all that?
Well, it's one thing that we have a luxury of having depth, you know, and which is, I mean, we've got probably five starting pitchers that are kind of coming and going that could be everyday guys for another team, you know.
Donati being one of them.
Yeah, and so, you know, and I understand the case. His case, you know, they're trying to take it easy. He's coming back from, you know, the injury and but you know, these other guys that are kind of coming back, you know, I understand the ideology behind it because you keep a fresh arm. I understand that, but then there's also a rhythm too that you lose when you don't have the consistent work. That's why I enjoy, you know, coming back on earlier days rest. But the more and more I pitch, I feel like the better I am. You know, when I go 10 days without throwing, man, I really dislike it, you know, and because I just feel like it's a rhythm. You know, this baseball is about a rhythm, and it's about getting into some sort of a groove, and you know, it's monotonous at times, but I feel like it's important.
Okay, now what's this team's identity? Because going forward now, you're going to be playing in the playoffs, we assume, and you're going to be playing teams that, you know, how does this team win?
I really believe that we will win if we can score four or five runs a game. I really believe that, you know, because I believe that our pitching can keep, you know, three runs, you know, keep them to three runs. I really believe that, you know, no matter who's out there. And I really believe that we can do that. And if we can do that, I really feel like that we'll win, you know. You know, our pitching always, to me, wins championships. Pitching does.
Yeah.
But you also have to score to win.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, so with that said, I do believe if we come out and we hit, our pitching's going to be there. I really believe that. So that's my opinion. But I really feel like we need to pitch good as well, too. But I really feel like if we hit and we score some runs, we're going to win.
I'm with you there. So last question, Adna. Earlier this season, you were ejected from a game at QVC when you hit your former teammate, Craig Brazell.
Yeah.
What happened in that instance, and what was going through your mind in that state?
Well, you know, first of all, I hit three guys in that inning. You know, he was the third guy hit in the inning, and I don't even recall hitting three guys in a game ever. You know, and the two that I hit, I think I hit Suzuki and I believe I hit Imai, and those were just fastballs I was trying to throw in, and you know, just kind of got away. The one to Craig, the one that I was ejected for hitting him in the head, I was trying to throw a fastball in, and I just missed terribly. I've never missed that bad before, and to be able to miss and to hit a guy in the head, not only just to hit a guy in the head, but a guy that you know. I mean, I would never want to hit a stranger in the head either, but just a guy that I know. It scared me because you never want to do something to hurt anybody. I don't care, even if I have a nemesis on the field, I never want to hurt another player, and especially my friend. You know, so I go over there, and you know, my initial thought is I'm praying for him, you know, and I'm asking God to protect him, you know, but you know, and on the same hand, I'm scared because I'm like, I just did that, you know, and so it was kind of a sickening feeling, you know, to know that I did something that it could have possibly really hurt somebody, you know, and especially my friend too, you know. And I went out to lunch with him the next day, and you know, I felt terrible, you know, and he was telling me, hey, don't worry about it, you know, but it just it really bothered me to know that I did that, and because I'm not that guy, you know. know, I don't go head hunting. I don't go hitting people.
Right. And you can't be that guy in last.
No, and I'm not that guy, you know. And so I'm going to pitch inside aggressively, but I'm not that guy to hit a guy on purpose, you know, and just to hit the three in the inning and then to end up with a – it was just – so I really had to forget about it, you know, because stuff like that can really mess with a pitcher's head, and it can keep you from pitching inside aggressively. And you can't do that. You have to let that go. You have to release that. And so it was a tough situation for me, you know. And luckily, I'm friends with him. He's not mad at me, you know. So we're good.
All right. So you're number one starter in the playoffs when the playoffs start?
You know, I wouldn't say that I am. I can't label myself as that. You know, I mean, we've got a lot of guys that are throwing really well, and if they name me that, I embrace that. You know, and I will always take the ball when the game's on the line. And if the game is on the line and they're looking for volunteers, buddy, I'm fighting people to get up to the front line. You know, so whatever they decide. You know, I'll plead my case if, you know, if not, you know, whatever, but, I'm going to be ready to pitch no matter when they tell me, but, I always want to be the guy with the ball in his hand, the game on the line.
All right. Well, we'll wish you luck and we'll see you again later in the season, hopefully.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Jason. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, you know, it was good to hear that because, I don't know, I guess I mentioned before that I saw Jason when I went to Fukuoka in September. I was looking for him before the game. I knew he was starting, but I did cover that game, and I didn't see him afterward. He wasn't the game hero. He did throw well, but I did catch him after the game and was introduced to his very lively son, who looked lively until he was introduced to this big foreigner about the same size as his dad, and he's like going, who is this guy? He's going to say hello to Mr. Allen. Like, do I have to? No, he was pleasant. He was just kind of taken back. I guess he's not used to seeing other foreigners,
right,
other than the normal cast, you know, usual suspects at Fukuoka Dome,
right,
or Fuoku Dome or Oki Dome or whatever it is.
Well, what a great guy Jason is. I wish we could have him on the show more. I think this was just his second time being on the show as an interview, but we certainly appreciate the time. So what was it that stayed with you afterward?
Well, I think the norm, I guess the bit about the Tigers and moving to the Hawks, it's always such a difficult thing, and most of the guys we talk through have been through this. You know, you want to stay with a team where you know everybody, but I was also kind of curious. I think last year, both Jason and Randy Messenger were, I would say they were about dead even in effectiveness.
Yeah.
But that being said, I also, whenever some scout told me they were going to watch the Tigers, Standridge's name was not the one they mentioned. It was always Randy Messenger, and I'm guessing it's because of the age.
Yeah, I would say they want the younger chicken.
Well, chicken. When I think of Randy Messenger, the word chicken doesn't come to mind. More like ox. You know, he's a big, square, powerful guy. Jason's also a big guy, but he's taller, and he has maybe a little more prone to flying open when he delivers, but his taller pitchers would seem likely to. But anyway, yeah, I think that was the thing, is they went that way, and it made perfect sense to me, and it also made perfect sense for Jason to fly back to Fukuoka with the Hawks. And okay, fleet.
No, fly. Fly back with the Hawks. Hey, soar, baby.
Oh, okay. That had wings.
Ride the sky. All right.
Yeah. Okay, so that was good, and he told me at the start of the season he was really happy to be back. He liked the city before. He was happy to be there, and he was part of this massive upgrade. You know, this is the thing, is he talked about Oryx and SoftBank, and now – you know, he was part of this big upgrade at SoftBank.
Mm-hmm.
As our listeners will likely remember, you know, they brought in him. They brought in Brian Wolfe.
Right.
They brought in Kenichi Nakata. They brought in Lee Deho. They brought in Shinya Tsuruoka to catch.
Right.
And you know, it seemed like nobody, you know, it, every year with SoftBank, it's like the same story. They bring in so many guys, they can't possibly not win the league.
You would think, yeah.
You would think, but, you know.
They manage to not win it sometimes. Or even if they get to the playoffs, they manage to lose there.
True. So, yeah, so things have, and the Hawks, somebody in the Hawks front office told me that, you know, they were kind of surprised that Lee Deho was not as clutch as they thought he had been with Oryx.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie Mopena, who had been hurt, now he's doing well. And it was like, I didn't see, you know, when he said about Oryx, I didn't see Willie Mopena and Esteban Hermann, as much as I like them, I did not see them as being an even switch with Aaron Balderas and Lee Deho.
Right, yeah.
And they have been. I mean, they have been. Willie Mo has been had a better year than Lee Deho has had. Esteban Hermann has not been quite what Balderas was, but he's had an okay year. I mean, not for him, it hasn't been an okay year, but it's been productive. So that Oryx appreciation was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, so as we're speaking, yeah, the wheels have sort of fell off, right? I think it was the day after you talked to him.
Yeah. They went out and lost 6-5 to the Lions that night.
And they won the next day, and then they got swept by the Eagles.
Yeah.
And in four games.
At home. And some very interesting games, but... Yeah, I mean, you know, they had lost before today, they had lost 8 of 9, and during the week, the Oryx Buffalo saw their magic number at 7. And even though they were in second place, which was really weird. So,
yeah.
And they still didn't even have the advantage, because the only reason they had a magic number was because they have more games remaining on their schedule at the time. And if they were to win them all, they could overcome or surpass the Hawks in winning percentage.
Yeah.
But they still had to win almost all their games.
Right. Well, I guess some of our listeners understand the way magic numbers work in Japan.
In Japan,
and
yes.
I would say some, because if I couldn't explain it, you know, if I tried to explain it, it would take up half the show and half of you would leave because it's so dull.
That's why
it's bizarre.
Yeah, that's why I said the magic number hit 7. And
in Japan, the big thing is the magic number lights up, they say, and then it disappears.
And the light goes out.
the light goes out. Well, the Hawks haven't had one yet, and they kept saying the Hawks keep failing. They needed to win one game to have a magic number, which meant that they had a magic number, one more than the magic number that would light up magically.
Oh, yeah, just bring a magician out here. A magician
I know,
here to explain
just,
the whole thing to us, because this is really some magic.
It's a break, I know. Okay, so so all this weird stuff was going on, but yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting, the relationship with the Oryx Buffaloes, and they played them pretty well. And the bit about the pitchers, because the starting pitchers. Now, there were two issues. I guess one issue going into the season, which was Brian Falkenberg told me that the issue last year was the Hawks was the bullpen was worked to death.
Here's the thing.
The Hawks told me basically the bullpen was worked to death, but Falkenberg wasn't willing to go down that road.
He didn't want to die on the mound.
he didn't want to die working on the railroad.
Well, I would offer this to Mr. Falkenberg. What bullpen in Japan would he go to where he wouldn't be worked to death?
Well, he wanted one where the manager was a pitcher.
I still don't have an answer. Team in Japan would he go to where the bullpens are not worked to death? I just don't see that team.
Yeah, well, I haven't spoken to him in a few days, so I can't answer that question. I can't answer that question for him. But he said that was the penalty unit on the Hawks team was the bullpen, and apparently someone told me on the team that they considered his work ethic less than stellar. Now I can't verify that. I can't say that.
Yeah, we wouldn't know.
Who would know? I wouldn't know. But anyway, somebody said that that was the impression he gave, probably by trying. I think what caused that impression was self-preservation.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're dying here. Why should I, you know, commit mass suicide with the rest of the relievers?
But he said they were not, punch,
they were not healthy at the end of the year, and that was the that was what when the team needed really the bullpen the most, they were dying. So I haven't. I'm really curious. I haven't had a chance to look this up this week, but I wouldn't be surprised if their bullpen ERA is going sky high because they're losing a lot of games in the fifth and sixth innings. They're losing big leads in the fifth and sixth innings.
Yeah, well, I mean, early on in this instance of losing that they've had, because this month they've just been very inconsistent. And what I've noticed is, yeah, the starting pitching, whenever the starter gets tired and they go to the bullpen, they have failed to hold leads. They have failed to keep scores intact. Or they've let, you know, all the things, all the telltale signs of a bad team. They just.
Well, you mean, even though they had the Pacific League's pitcher of the month for August, what, because he went through 30 games in August or something, you think somebody might be tired?
30 games? Weren't there 31 days in August? Couldn't you work that next day, buddy?
he was throwing.
He'd be taking a day off.
They probably had Igarashi down throwing on the farm team when they didn't have games.
The poor guy. And, yeah, he had one of the awful games of his career, I think. I would venture to say the worst of his career.
Yeah, I think four bases loaded walks in an inning counts as bad.
But you know what? You have to be somewhat good to be allowed to do that.
Right.
And I think, yeah, four bases loaded walks, and this was on Thursday in a game they ended up losing by one run, 8-7. And in the seventh inning, he walked five guys. So, obviously he's, you know, that bullpen, and we talked about it before, how they wear out their relievers and how we used to see guys pitching on that team we don't see anymore. We know they're still on the team. We know they have an address there with the team who we're not,
like
we want proof of life. Yeah, we need proof of life because we haven't seen them.
Well, we have proof of life of the Hawks bullpen. They're all over the Pacific, the rest of NPB. I mean, Mahara's with Oryx now.
I think we have, yeah, proof of death in some cases too. But, you know, I really love getting back to the interview. I really love listening to Jason, not just because he's from Alabama and he has that accent, but, you know, he's candid. He's really, he doesn't hold back. And it's good to hear him detail. Well, for me, it was interesting to hear him detail that the hit by pitch that he threw and hit Craig Berzel. And I think it was a headshot, right? Because he got thrown out of the game.
Yes. Yes.
And this was July 14th, and I'm not sure what I said in the interview. I think it was May that I said, but I think it was July 14th at QVC, and it came with two out in the third inning, and the Marines eventually won this game 1-0. It's really weird, but when you hear a guy talk about how many times how sometimes they lose control of their pitches, and this was one of those instances because he said he hit three guys in an inning.
Yeah, it was probably time for him to come out of the game.
Do you think he was tired, you know, in July and at the windy QVC?
Could be.
No, I don't think so. But when you think about the 115 to 120 pitches a lot of guys throw every game, it's amazing that these guys don't miss location a lot more and hit a lot more guys than they do. And it's just a tribute to how good these guys really are. And
yeah,
this is one of the things we always hear with the foreign players who come over and play in Japan. They say, and most of the hitters I'm talking about, they say, look, the pitchers in Japan generally have really good control. They can put the ball where they want to. And that makes me think about the guys who, obviously, we've talked to a lot of Latin players, so in those Latin countries and then in the States, who come over and think, well, you know, I can throw hard, so if I get the ball about where I want to, I can have success, and they probably can have success over there. But these pitchers here are—they're such control artists. And you know, to hear a guy talk about that, and to hear in his voice how much it pained him to hit somebody who, like he said, he wouldn't want to hit somebody he didn't know, but hitting a friend made it even worse. But the fact that they went to lunch the next day, I'm like, what are we doing here? Because
I think that's called lack of memory.
Yeah, Craig's like, didn't you hit me in the head yesterday?
It was Jason that hit him.
Jason said, no, man, that was that other foreign dude.
Well, you know, the scary thing, and I mentioned it before, was that Brazil's tenure with the Cebu Lions, he played 1 year with the Cebu Lions before he reappeared with Hanshin about 3 months into the season or 2 months into the season, was that he got hit in the head at the very end of the season, and he had a severe concussion.
Yeah.
So this is always something scary when it comes to Craig Brazil. And, you know, his ears were bleeding and he was having dizzy spells weeks after.
Mm.
So, and to be honest, we haven't heard from him since, really.
Yeah.
So that's scary. And I would congratulate Jason on being able to come back from that, because that is not easy.
I don't think so. And it's difficult. I mean, it just tells me as a batter, you really just always have to be ready to bail. And these guys are tough, man. They really hang in, especially lefty-lefty matchups. And these guys really hang in. So, you know, I don't know how they hit the ball. I got to be honest. I could never hit, so I couldn't be a part of this thing. But I'd probably, if I were playing baseball, I'd be a pitcher. And you never get an Ohtani situation out of me. I wouldn't want to step in the batter's box and put my face in front of the ball and bunt. No way. I'm out of here.
Yeah. No leg before wickets for John Gibson, man.
All right, well, let's continue on talking about the Pacific League race. Now, this magic number situation in the Buffaloes, they won on Thursday, and they opened play on Friday with a magic number of 7, but then, as Tyrone Woods used to say, their butts got tight. Let's put it that way. Let's clean it up.
Well, wow.
Their butts got a little bit tight.
Okay, that was modified woodage.
Modified woodage? I don't even know what that means, but I'm not going there. All I can say is they've lost 2 in a row in really close games, and the worst way you can imagine losing games. They had leads, and they let them get away. So now we talked about this magic number. It's gone. It's disappeared. Essentially, they have to almost win out. And SoftBank, which has 2 more games to play, if they win them both, then that really puts the pressure on Oryx, which is just 1 game behind and has 6 games to play. And that's before we go into Sunday's matchups. So I would say the Hawks, we're in the driver's seat, you know, even though the Buffaloes had the magic number. And this was the first time in how many years? Did you get that? It was the first time that a second place team had a magic number. I think it was 16 years, and I think the team was Cebu, that the second place team had the magic number ahead of the first place team.
Right. And that's the
that's in the Pacific League.
Right, and I was just thinking 2010 with the Tigers.
Right, Yahoo reported that Hanshin had the same situation in 2010. Excellent. So,
but yeah, it's pretty rare. Basically, as much as I want to talk about magic numbers is this. The way they calculate it, you can't count potential wins against the team you have to beat.
Mm, okay.
So you basically leave out those games.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can then clinch a championship by not beating the team you have to beat,
then
you have a magic number.
Magically, you have a number that appears. All right.
Right.
Well, the problem with Oryx having to win out is that it plays Rakuten 4 times. And Rakuten somehow is hot right now, and they're doing their best to avoid a last place finish. And actually, as we go into games on Sunday, they're in 4th place. And I remember seeing something on the Facebook page that you wrote about them. You want to talk about that?
I said right after Oshino quit that, was it 2 weeks ago?
I don't think it was. I think it was about 10 days, maybe 9.
Anyway, the day I was thinking how well they'd been playing, but they were still in last. They were in last place. But I was thinking how well they'd been hitting. And they've been very resilient. And then I looked at the number and I'm going, wow. So they've been incredible. They've been the team of September.
Definitely. They've been the best team in September, and I think Hoshino took a couple guys out behind the woodshed and say, and said, hey, look, I'm dying here. Don't let me die being the manager who went from first to worst. Don't do it.
You know, I was thinking, yeah, in 2003, Hoshino left the Tigers because of health reasons that were bigger than that were not as big as he thought they were.
Right, which we discussed last week, yep.
Correct, and he went to the Japan Series, and he went into the Japan Series saying, win or lose, I'm done.
Right.
Well, the Rakuten Eagles right now are in a better position than the Chiba Lotte Marines were in 2010 when they won their last three games to get the last playoff spot on the last day of the season and then stormed through the postseason like the blitzkrieg.
Right.
So what happens if the Eagles win the Japan Series again?
Not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Well, you can't know that.
I can't know it. I would say it, though.
Let's
it doesn't make it
way.
True.
Just right. Well, it is not impossible. I'd say that their chances are probably in the realm of 2 or 3%.
0.2 or 3%. I'm kidding. I just cannot.
There's only five teams. There's really only five teams that can make the seven teams that can make the playoffs, and they're in the least likely position to make the playoffs. But again, I'd give them about a 1/3 chance, maybe 20% chance to make the playoffs right now. It's not good, but it's possible.
Well,
and
they haven't been eliminated.
They're playing very well.
Yeah.
So could it happen? Sure, it could happen. You know, weird things happen in baseball. And again, even seven games, weird things can happen.
That's true. That's true.
And again, they're in the Pacific League, which means they face tougher competition all season than the Central League does. So the Pacific Central League teams don't do well in the Japan Series. If they get as far as the Japan Series, and considering their postseason opposition is now Oryx and SoftBank, who are, you know, if you take any credence from the adage that you want to get hot when it matters most,
those teams.
If they had the playoffs today, I'd pick. I wouldn't think the Eagles were a bad choice.
No, I would definitely pick them over either SoftBank. I'd pick them over the top three teams. Now, there's one interesting aspect I wanted to point out.
Ed.
About the Pacific League is that the way the standings finished last year are the three teams that were in the playoffs are at the moment and for a while now, they've been out of the playoff picture.
Mm.
And the three teams that were out of the playoffs last year are the three teams that are in the playoffs. So it's completely flipped. I mean, not a complete flip, but it's flipped.
No, it's not because Fighters are in third place instead of last place.
Right, right. So not a complete flip, but
it's the top two teams and the bottom two teams.
Right. The top half has become the bottom half and vice versa. So I think that was interesting. And then in the Central League, if the playoffs started today, the Central League would look almost like it did last year, except for the fact that the Tigers were second and the Carp were third last year, and that would flip-flop. But the way the Carp have been playing, it looks like that's where we're headed because they haven't been able to close out games either. And they had their issues last night in a loss, an extra inning loss to the Dragons. So I find it really interesting. It'd be really neat to see the standings play out the same at the top of the Central League 2 years in a row.
Yeah, well, the Central League has been decided. I don't think the Marines have been eliminated either. So I have to correct that and say there are five. The Lions are the only team that have been eliminated.
No, I think the Marines were eliminated.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. So we'll take that out. Yes. So yeah, like you said, the Giants have three-peated in the Central League and. We got a note on the Facebook page from our friend Claudio in Toronto, and he says, question for the show, and I want to break tradition here. We're going to go without...
Break tradition!
Oh, I can put it back together. I can do it.
Okay, Humpty Dumpty, let's go for it.
He says, question for the show. How in the world is Yomiuri about to win its third CL pennant in a row? Only two of its everyday players are hitting above 250. Murata leads the team with only 62 RBI. He's got 65 now. This letter came in, I think, on Thursday or Friday. Lopez leads the team with just 21 homers. He's got 22 now. And he's not even playing every day. The best everyday hitter is Hisayoshi Chono, and he's only hitting 297. Just two starters have 10 or more wins. Sugano leads the team with only 12 wins. There's not even a clear MVP candidate. How are they doing this?
And yeah, well, that's the answer. They don't have an MVP candidate, so let's kick them out of first place.
Well, I want to talk about that, too. I just don't know if we'll have time. We'll probably have to do it next week. But look, it's no shock for me because they have so much more talent and depth than any other team that they have the ability to do this. And they battled through some injuries, some poor play, and a very competitive Central League, in my opinion, and they have a lot of depth on the mound, and we didn't know that. And, of course, they shortened the rotation earlier on in the season, and I thought that would be the end of them. But everybody made their adjustments, and I shouldn't say everybody, because the pitching staff held it together, the rotation held it together.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And not only that, they got better. Utsumi was awful in the beginning of the season, but he got better, especially when the money was on the table, when the chips were down.
Utsumi's pitching like we expect.
Yeah. So
in the first half of the season, he was pitching like we expected Shun Yamaguchi to pitch.
Right. Yeah, Shun Yamaguchi. like we expected him to pitch. When? You got to finish that sentence.
Well, whenever. Put them out there, and what would you expect? So, but, speaking of people who have defied expectations. So, yeah, exactly. I mean, I was thinking, when I saw the question from Claudio, I was thinking, wow, this is the thought that's going through my mind is how the heck did they do it? Now, I pointed out, I guess on a number of occasions this year that if you took their runs scored and runs allowed, the Giants would have been fifth or in last place with the Swallows. Now, they have turned that around. Actually, they've improved in that respect quite a bit. Their offense has come along, and I think the key to their offense coming along has been Yasuyuki Kame, who has had a superb season. He just didn't play the first – His season is very much like Shingo Kawabata's of the Swallows last year. It's like he's having a half an MVP year.
Yeah. I'm going to ask the question. I'm going to throw it to the listeners, but I'm going to ask them who, if they had to pick, well, I guess we'll get to it, but if they had to pick a Giant, who would they pick? Because I think we're going to have to figure
MVP,
out who the MVP is the media is going to select. So that'll be the question, but I'll throw that at the end. But here's the thing is, I think we really have to applaud. I mean, I don't want to sound like a Giants honk or anything, but I think we really have to applaud this effort by the Giants because this is what every team strives for. Next man up, covering for the injured, producing on a part-time basis, doing your job. And I think this is – everybody talks about this. They get on the interview podium and they say, well, this was a team win and this was a team this and that. This was a total team effort. And if anything, we should be sitting back and saying, okay, well, you don't need an MVP candidate. You don't need an ace. You don't need a guy who bashes the ball and drives in a bunch of runs. What you need is for everybody to do their job and come through. And of course, I talked about the depth, but this is what the potential, if guys just do what they're supposed to do, if you get guys over, if you bunt guys over, if you make plays in the field, if you pitch well, you hit your spots, that you can win enough games to be in position to get a championship or at least a pennant.
Well, I think one, there's that, and Hara applauded that when they won the pennant. He said that it was an extremely cohesive. Now, he said it was a good defensive team, and I'm not buying that.
I'm not either, but I mean...
But you have to do something. I think that's accounting for the really good team RA, despite a lot of really sad efforts from the bullpen early on.
Yeah,
that has kind of smoothed over quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The bullpen was either every day was like a roll of the dice. They're going to be really bad or really good tonight. And this year, and in the second half, they haven't hit the highs that they did early in the season, but the lows are gone. You know, they've had very few really, really bad games, but just steady, steady, steady most of the way. And the other thing is Yuki Koyama.
I was going to bring him up as a starter, yeah.
Has just done an amazing job. You know, he's like, I have to think back to a Carp Giants game, and they were playing at Tokyo Dome, and the Carp were had a one-run lead in the ninth inning, and the Giants announcers were pretty much chuckling that they brought out this chubby youngster, Nakazaki, who's got really – he's an awkward, chubby-looking pitcher, but he has really good movement on his – he's got – normally he's very good. But the Giants announcers were chuckling, ah, no Mikolajo tonight. The Carp are giving up by throwing Nakazaki out there, and bam, 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 there they go out of the game. So that – but when Koyama came out, they would say, oh, this guy's got great potential. And it was kind of that thing. I thought, who is this guy Koyama? But they kept – you know, Hara did what – Hara does. He puts young guys with some promise who have done well in the minors usually, and he gives them opportunities to make adjustments at the top level. And if they fail, he continues to give them opportunities. He just, you know, lets them go back and, you know, get their head on right and come back. And Koyama has been the guy who made the adjustments and has pitched really, really well. Yeah. In a
spot start. He's been a spotty starter. Yeah, yeah.
But he's been really good. There's a few other things to say about the Giants, but you know, they like what you said. I can't speak more about the Giants pulling together. And I guess the core of that issue is that what you said is absolutely true. The Giants pulled together and played like a team, which is not, I guess, the traditional way the Giants do things.
Yeah.
You know, it's more bludgeon people with your talent. But the other thing is they never panic. And Kenjiro Nomura said of the Giants the day they won the pennant, they asked all the Central League managers for comments, and at least Kyoto News did. And he said, you know, they come to beat you and they don't give up, and they, when they get a lead, they don't think they're going to lose it. Yeah. You know, they may, but they don't expect to lose it.
They never expect to lose. Exactly. And that winning attitude that I talked about before. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that is part of it. And I give credit to the Giants players for that. Now, can I give them credit for not playing well? I think they underperformed in many respects, but the way the team responded to their teammates not playing well, I think was superb. I think in the past, this is the kind of Giants team where some of the key guys didn't do well and everybody would be pointing fingers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they could point – another place they can point to is the 14 games over 500 that they were at Tokyo Dome. And one aspect that I read in a story in our paper yesterday was that in 137 games, they had no less than 100 batting orders. So they had to juggle whether the lineup was the same. They just juggled the batting order, or some guys were in and out.
Some guys were in and out. I mean,
well, we know that they were in and out.
Yeah, Shinosuke Abe was up and down the lineup first and catcher, and you know, he didn't hit well at all. And how can you expect the Giants to do well when Abe really has a horrible season?
Yeah, considering.
Well, horrible season, you know, with a 700 OPS, but for him, that's a horrible season.
Right, right. Not the guy we're used to. They had seven guys bat in the cleanup spot, including Frederic Cepeda, who hasn't seen the first team in quite a while. And, I mean, you know, like I said, this is what you should be striving for your team. You know, when somebody goes down, that the replacements come up and do well. And these replacements weren't, you know, the Hashimoto's and the Kame's who came in. Yeah, actually, Kame came in, and I like what you said about him. I think he's a possible MVP candidate anyway, because I just, like Claudio said, I don't think you can look at any one player on this team and call them the best player in the league or the most valuable player on this team.
Because, but you can't.
Because
you can't.
Obviously they all went down at some point and they were replaced by someone who got the job done. So that means that they weren't that valuable in my opinion.
Yeah, I know. And it has been weird because Leslie Anderson had also had a spectacular half a season. Yoshinobu Takahashi had a very good half season. Before he was wiped out for the year. It's been a very crazy thing. I guess if I had to pick somebody, it would be Sugiuchi. But,
I really don't know. So
it's not an easy pick.
Yeah, I can only, offer this, that it's not about averages and sabermetrics and, it's not about having a plan all the time and executing it. It's about going out there and competing and competing hard. And like you said, if they get leads, they don't expect to lose them. And the manager plays it that way. I want to use Facebook and Twitter, and I want you guys to tweet in who you think is the player the media will select as the MVP from the Giants, because we'll have to call it a quasi-MVP because I really think Yosuke Kikuchi of the Hiroshima Carp is more deserving. I think Mauro Gomez and Matt Merton of the Hanshin Tigers are also more deserving. And I would even throw Brad Eldridge back into the race since he's come up and he's not striking out every at bat. But I think, numbers wise, he just didn't have a complete season, but he's done a lot. But who do you guys think is going to be the player that the media selects?
Yeah, so I think it's a two-part question. Who's your MVP and who do you think the media is? Because we always have to separate this.
Yeah, because it's...
Who do you think the writers are going to vote for?
Right.
Shohei Ohtani. Oh, wrong league. Maybe they can make him a central leaguer so they can have an MVP.
All right. One note. One of my favorite players, Makoto Kaneko of the Nippon Ham Fighters, a longtime shortstop there, announced on Saturday, I think maybe it was Friday. Well, I saw
Saturday.
It in the paper. Yeah. That he will be retiring at the end of the season. And I guess in a sense he kind of retired 2-3 years ago because he hasn't really been productive. He's been more like a coach, I think, or a coaching figure or a very senior figure on the team. But one of my favorite guys, I remember in 2006 when the Fighters were making their big push to win that first championship in forever. I think it was 41 years at the time or that they hadn't won a Japan series. And I went up to Trey Hillman and I said, "Hey Trey, who's the one guy who we in the media have ignored who I could talk to?" And I had a couple of guys in mind, of course, when I asked him the question, but I wanted to know who he thought was important. And he said, "You know what? My shortstop Kaneko, he's the guy who's probably gets passed over the most as with his contributions not being looked at as very big. And the mainstream media kind of skips him. So why don't you go and talk to him?" And so I said, "Okay, well, why do you think this?" And I got the interview with Trey first. And then I sat down with Mac, as people like to call him. And we sat down in the dugout at what's now called QVC Marine Field. And we had a really nice chat. And I wrote up the story. And Trey said, "Hey, that was a good story." And I said, "You know what? He's a good story." it wasn't me. It was that story kind of wrote itself. And he called himself the glue guy, and this was a team with big personalities and big guys, with Shinjo and Fernando Seguino, and obviously Trey Hillman was like a rock star at that time, and they were about to win the Japan Series. Darvish was on the team, and I mean there was a lot going on there, but he was the little guy. He said he called himself the glue with the team and made everybody work together. And I thought,
yeah, Trey said that Kaneko was, oh no, he had a head coach, Kazuhiko Shirai, who was, speaks really good English, and it was a kind of a conduit, but Kaneko was the kind of conduit between the players and the coaching staff on the playing side, and they had a really good relationship, and I believe Kaneko was part of that, a little bit of, was it a rebellion in 2005 when the Fighters underperformed and Trey was basically about to get fired, and the team basically said, we're going to go back to a Japanese way of doing things. The American way ain't working. And Kaneko didn't – he played like a half a season. He was not one of the big players. He was – you know, there was a lot of – it wasn't friction. It was sort of a
– consternation.
It was a cross-cultural communication. You know, what we had here was a failure to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they were putting people in the box or nothing, but Kaneko was reduced to a part-time job in 2005, and he was the player's rep, and it was really a difficult thing. But Trey, you know, they sort of had a meeting of the minds in 2006, and the Fighters came out of the gate in 2006 playing well, but not winning games.
Mm.
And I remember this because I went out to QVC and I saw a couple of games in the beginning of May,
uh-huh,
or the end of April, and the Fighters were close to last place. But the games I was watching, I'm going, these guys are playing hard, and they're playing well, and they're losing by just sort of, you know, smoke and mirrors. I thought, I wrote a column about it. I said, you know, this team is not headed for last place. And then it was a month later, Trey Hillman's job was on the line, and Bobby Valentine had a story floated in Sporting News about major league teams interested in Trey Hillman, you know, try to get Trey, you know, to
get
Trey a job. And the Fighters basically had to eventually talk to him as their, you know, they wanted to get rid of him. So it all came together, and Kaneko was a part of that. And Trey had my favorite quote about Makoto Kaneko the following year, the couple of days before he left Japan to go back and manage the Kansas City Royals. He said, Kaneko is this kind of guy, and he said, if you have a booger hanging out of your nose, Kaneko will walk up to you and say, hey, you got a booger hanging out your nose. And he said, in that respect, he's not very Japanese.
Right. Interesting. We'll miss him. We'll miss him.
We will.
Yeah, he's a good guy. All right, let's go quickly to fielding questions.
Okay. Now, this is Anthony Pang in Australia. And anyways, enjoyed the show as always. I always remember the thing regarding nationalities and Hall of Fame. Who really knows how many closet Koreans there are? Wasn't it during the Olympics one time where they realized a fair number of the players in Japan weren't eligible for the Japanese team?
All right, so yeah, this question came in a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the Hall of Fame stuff. So we weren't able to get to it last week. So go ahead.
So I would say in regards to the Olympics, no, because they're pretty careful about people's passports and citizenship. It's not like some sports where you don't have to be a citizen to play for the national team. But no, not the Olympics, but there has been a kind of rush among some players to get their nationality, to become naturalized Japanese in order to play for the national team. And I don't want to say who they are because it's a because of the discrimination in Japan against Koreans, and a lot of the players don't like to make a big deal about it. But I have said in the past that Japan, Korea, national team games are very much like which country has the best Korean players, because I would say half of Japan's stars on the national team are of Korean ancestry. There's that issue. But yes, guys have had their passports changed. As far as the Hall of Fame, yeah, so many people, once they become famous in Japan, unless they're white, they pretty much are considered Japanese.
Mm, yep, yeah.
You know, most of the great players, even the ones who, it's almost like they say, well, to Isao Harimoto, who's probably either the best or the second best achiever of base hits from Japan, you know, they sort of treat him like, well, you know, he's Korean and we can deal with that, but he's more like one of us. Let's give him a raise. Let's give him a promotion. You know, there's that attitude. If you do well, Wally Yonamine wasn't considered – when he was hired to manage the Chunichi Dragons, he was considered a foreign manager. When he won the Japan Series, he was considered a Japanese manager.
Congratulations.
Exactly.
You made it. All right, and I think we've made it to the end of this show, so we're going to have to say goodbye. By the time we talk to you again, all the playoff matchups will be set, and we'll be able to talk about that and do our previews. So We will be enjoying the postseason next week, so enjoy your baseball with us. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye, and keep thinking about the MVPs.
Yeah, enjoy your baseball. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.